Everyone, welcome to the press. It's great to have you here with us. We've got the first of two shows this week. We're going to talk about the Valspar Championship, particularly in this episode. Our second episode will also be predominantly about the Valspar Championship. We just don't have a whole lot of other action this week to talk about. So we've got the DP World Tour over in Singapore for the second consecutive major tour playing over there. Or really, third, you have the LPGA Tour there as well. LPGA is off this week. Korn Ferry Tour is off this week. We do have the Champions Tour. They have the Hogue Classic. We're not going to talk about that. We're not at that point in the year yet where we're going to talk about that, where we have enough kind of data points to make our four or five players that we just arbitrage every week. So we'll get back to that later. But let's get into things right away with the Valspar Championship. This is one of the kind of cult classic favorite tournaments of the year, especially among the players. If you look at the field this week, you have about half of the world top 50 competing in this tournament. Considering they're playing for about one-third the money from last week, I'd say that's pretty impressive that they've got that kind of field this week. It really is all about the course, and it's about the Copperhead course being a good test. The graphic's wrong, but the course itself is fascinating. Opened in 1974, designed by Larry Packard. Larry Packard really hasn't done a whole lot of prolific work. I mean, he died at like the age of 92. Just not too long ago, but this golf course was the second golf course opened at the resort. Opened in 1970, the Island course opened first. They have I think four or five on the property. Then along came the Copperhead course. This has been the host course for this tournament since it was the Tampa Bay Classic in 2000. So the players have a high degree of familiarity with it. The tournament has evolved over the years. It used to be a fall event, obviously, has long since been part of the Florida Swing. Basically the post-players event for a number of years now. Again, $8.7 million purse, 500 FedEx Cup points to the winner, $1.566 million to the winner. Interestingly enough, on the scorecard, this is the exact same yardage as last week at TPC Sawgrass, 73-52. And it's really interesting if you look at the scorecard. We're not going to go so in-depth with it here, but almost all of the holes, but like one, end in zero or five yardages. And there are two par threes on the back, and there are five overall, but there are two par threes in the back with the exact same yardage, 215 yards. All of them are 195 to like 235. And of course, you know, it's par 71, and you also know about the snake pit finish. And it's a pretty demanding set of holes. There's a lot that's asked on this golf course where you would think Florida golf just kind of tells you, hey, it's flat. It's not that hard to get around. There's a lot of land movement on this course, and I think the biggest feature of it, other than some of the claustrophobic tee shots, is you've got to be able to hit targets that are downhill and uphill, often in the same hole. There are a lot of holes in this golf course where you kind of hit into a valley and then you hit slightly uphill, or you hit down off the tee and then you've got to hit, you know, maybe even plane, but there are a lot of those different types of land movement tee shots, and a lot of them to tight looking areas, particularly on the back nine. There's a lot asked of you on this golf course. This is a ball striker's paradise. So first, let's go ahead and take a look at the top tier betting odds for the week. So these are the top 22 players in the field. This is using an overseas books. This has probably moved a little bit depending on when you looked at the odds board last, but this is from yesterday afternoon when we put these slides together. So Tommy Fleetwood's 12-1, and I feel like that's such a poor pricing because Tommy Fleetwood doesn't win in America. So you're betting 12-1 of the guy that's never won in America and is a world-class player. He's finally going to figure out how to win in America this week. That just seems like a horrible value on so many levels. If he wins, great job, not mad about it, but this is unbettable to me. Justin Thomas, 14-1, Xander Schauffele, 18-1. And I saw this as a comparison last week. I think Eric Patterson brought this up and I think it was interesting. Xander Schauffele's 18-1. Sepp Straka's 20-1. If you compare those two players in a vacuum, their entire careers, even last year in a vacuum, you would go, how in the world are they near the same number? But Xander Schauffele closed the Players with 81 on Sunday, and Sepp Straka has been great basically all year. So that's why you've got that compression, that comparison of prices. Corey Connors is a great course fit, as you'll see later. He is also coming off of a couple of great finishes between API and the Players. He's 22-1, just the kind of guy that this golf course suits. And we'll talk about that in our second episode of the week a little bit more. Shane Lowry's also 22-1. Sam Burns, a two-time back-to-back champion here, who is not playing very good golf currently, but is a two-time back-to-back champion here before Peter Malnati and Taylor Moore did the job. He is 25-1 with Will Zalatoris, who I think a lot of people had tried to come around to based on his start at the Players. And then obviously wasn't a huge factor in the end. He was a huge factor through much of it, but the putting stroke is just too variable for me. I'm gonna die on that sword. And if he figures it out and becomes a world-class putter, wins a major or two, so be it. But this also can work to his favor because if you look at this golf course, it really does favor a ball striker above all else. However, if you notice in the course fit data, especially among the top 25, it's a lot of short game that saves players. It gets them kind of into that top 25 level. So something to kind of an interesting dichotomy there. And then you've got Lucas Glover at 35-1, Michael Kim at 35-1. I never thought I would see the day where Michael Kim was 35-1 in a non-John Deere Classic, non-Oppo event. But if you look at the current trends, it's just too good. I mean, he's playing top 15, top 20 in the world caliber golf. I know it wasn't great at the Players. As I said last week, and I will say again this week, you kind of throw out the Players result. It's a tournament unto itself. If you have it, you have it. If you don't, you don't. It's not something that should linger for a long time. Maybe for a top player, but for a guy like Michael Kim, it shouldn't linger. It's a weird tournament to predict and a weird tournament to take any momentum from whatsoever. Tom Kim's 35-1. We'll talk about him a lot more in the second show because some of the numbers really do work out well for him. Luke Clanton is 40-1. Guy just earned his PGA Tour card through PGA Tour U Accelerated. He's in this weird stage of his career where he's about to transition to being a full-time professional and could legitimately win this tournament this week. It just is there for the taking for him if he wants it. Alex Smalley has had a great couple of tournaments, 45-1. Vic Hovland, JT Poston, I'm going to pass on those guys. Adam Scott rates out very well. So does Ben Griffin. Jake Knapp is 50-1. All those guys are really interesting plays. Jake Knapp's been playing well throughout the Florida swing in particular. Obviously had the 59 at Cognizant. Was at least part of the equation for a good chunk of Sunday at the Players. He's in a good place. Ben Ahn's 55-1, past champion here. Taylor Moore is 50-1. So taking all of those 22 guys in mind, let's take a look at the top 10 for my model that I produce every week for our members at golfnewsnet.com. $40 for 1 year, $70 for 2 years, $100 for 3 years over at golfnewsnet.com. We give out the top 10 for free. Most weeks there's not really a controversy around the top 10, so you're not gaining anything here out of the ordinary that the members don't get. However, I think this week is kind of surprising because Luke Clanton's third, and he doesn't have a huge body of work, right? He's got 12 tournaments that have been recorded by the PGA Tour as official starts, and those give him strokes gained, but not all of them gave him strokes gained. So a relatively limited sample size, but the sample size is really, really good, and that's why he's third in the field. Should he be third in the field? Not necessarily, but if you look at the body of work that's available within the confines of my model, which is 1 and 2 year windows, comparing your strokes gain total and your relative strokes gain compared to your quality of competition, as well as the last 3 years of the event played, so the Valspar, and then the last 10 events on the PGA Tour. Put all that together with different weights and percentages, this is what you get. Shoffley number one is not surprising. Tommy Fleetwood number two is not surprising. Clanton at three could be surprising if you don't know a lot about Luke Clanton, but this guy's a superstar in the making. Shane Lowry is fourth. JT is fifth. Remember, he's kind of hampered by a bad second year of this cycle, the back year of this cycle in 2023. And obviously, the other half of much of 2024 and most of 2025 so far has been good. Sam Burns is sixth, predominantly buoyed by his two wins here over the years. Keith Mitchell is seventh. Adam, who loves this golf course, Adam Scott is eighth. Sepp Strack is ninth, all around excellence. And Lucas Glover is 10th, which kind of surprised me a little bit. He wasn't obviously that high at the Players, but also had a very good week there, and at 45 years old, is still playing fantastic golf. I want to take a look at our horses for courses. So I kind of define this as someone who has multiple top 15 finishes in a tournament in the last 5 years that it was played. We don't really have a lot for this course, just like we didn't last week at the Stadium course at the Players. Justin Thomas is a horse for course. A couple of top 15 finishes. Obviously, Sam Burns is with a couple of wins, but he also has three total top 15 finishes, two wins and another top 15. But they haven't come in the last couple of years, so he has kind of slipped off of that run he had here. Adam Hadwin is the other kind of three top 15 finish horse for course. Not gotten quite close enough for a win, but is consistently solid here. Xander Schauffele continues to come back to this event because he plays the golf course well. And I throw in Jordan Spieth here because he's had some looks at it, but not necessarily kind of maybe that same stratosphere of the other players, but I did want to at least throw him in here and acknowledge some of his course history to a degree. Now, other people are going to look at this differently. Some people, and I just kind of talked about this flippantly, but some people might look at it as top 20 finishes or top 25 finishes. It kind of depends on what you think the standard is. I try to be a little tougher about it because I don't want to necessarily rely so hard on past experience that it clouds my judgment about present performance. So I try to have a tougher standard about it to include those guys in that conversation. We mentioned some of the past champions. This has been an interesting tournament the last 6 years because you've had two guys win four of them and then two guys out of nowhere. Peter Malnati won this thing out of nowhere last year. You could have never predicted that he would have won this tournament. You may have gotten there with Taylor Moore if you had real intuition about what he was doing at the time. But then the two prior years, you had Sam Burns twice, and then you didn't have it because of COVID. And then before that, you had Paul Casey. Obviously, Paul Casey is on live now. He's not playing on the PGA Tour. He's over in Singapore. We'll talk about him just for a brief second in the second episode because he's playing there this week for his second consecutive event in Singapore after the Live Golf Singapore event. Some more betting odds for the field, and there are some guys that are intriguing at these longer numbers. I think what you're going to find is a lot of consensus this week in terms of some of the picks. So Red Kachik has some really, really interesting picks this week. I went down like six guys. Like, all of them sound great. You know, Tommy Fleetwood, I would not pick at 12-1, even though I like the concept of his play. Sepp Straka, 20-1, makes a ton of sense. Shane Lowry makes a ton of sense. Michael Kim makes a ton of sense. Alex Smalley makes a ton of sense. Jake Knapp makes a ton of sense. Now we start to get into some of these longer shot guys. And again, those guys kind of make sense to me, at least staying in that, you know, 75-1 or shorter range and then trying to find a guy you really like in 150, 200 range. Cam Young played pretty well in TGL last night. I've said this so many times on the show and never done anything about that kind of data point, and I refuse to do so. I like Tom Dietrich quite a bit here at 60-1. Kitayama's a fun pick at 65-1. He rates out a little bit better than Dietrich does. I think Dietrich's done better this year. Sahith Theegala, Steven Yeager. My theory here is that you can be a long hitter and succeed as long as you keep it in play. I liked what Yeager did at the Players' Championship. I like him in general just because of how far he can get it out there. As long as he keeps the ball straight, he's really got a chance here. The only thing I really worry about is the reliance on putting that you'll see if you look at overall statistical data and try to make course fits. Max McGreevy's been playing really well, consistent golf, 70-1. I don't necessarily love that for a win play. I do love it for a top 20. Christian Bezuidenhooy is 75-1 along with Bud Cauley. Bud Cauley almost got it, man. He had a really great story going last week. I was there when he earned his PGA Tour card. Gosh, that's so long ago when I was with Golf Channel back out in California. And it was a huge accomplishment for him to do that with sponsor exemptions, not having to go to Q School, not having to go to the Corn Ferry Tour, and then at the time, the Nationwide Tour. Didn't have to do that. He's got all the potential in the world. Hopefully, he kind of takes something positive from falling short of the Players, that he got that close in the first place. He has so much more job security now because of that week, and I hope that frees him up. Rasmus Nørgaard-Petersen is 75-1 as well, kind of interesting. Harry Hall's 80-1. He kind of piques my interest, but he seems to have fallen off pretty dramatically from what he did in the fall and the early portion of the season, so I'm going to stay away from that. Nikolai and Rasmus Højgaard are both 80-1. Nikolai rates out better, but I like Rasmus more recently. I wouldn't bet either. I would rather go to Sam Stevens at 85-1 if you're going to make such a play. Billy Horschel's kind of interesting, but I like Kevin Roy. He rates out very well in our model with, again, limited sample size. But if you look, he's got two runs in this event, one where he made the cut, one where he missed the cut. He does pretty okay in this tournament, and he's also played pretty well this season coming back off of the Corn Ferry Tour. So I do like him a fair amount. Then we go a little bit deeper. We start to get into that 90s, 100s, and beyond range. Nicholas Norgaard, I love. I think he could be a star. I don't know if he's going to figure it out quite yet. Ryan Gerard is a super consistent player. He seems to kind of thrive in these particular types of tournaments where there's really not a ton of – there's guys you like, but there's not an obvious guy to like, if that makes sense. I like him quite a bit here. Seamus Power. Adam Hadwin's one of our horses for courses. He is not playing good golf whatsoever. You know, I have this temptation when I do our top 10 lists every week to kind of point out a guy at 10 that is a horse for course but maybe isn't playing the best. Adam Hadwin's playing worse than that standard, but he does have a good course record here. Could he wake up out of nowhere and play great? Yeah, and may I throw $5 on it? Also, yeah. Rico Hoey's really interesting here at 100-1. Has been playing pretty solid golf. I love Jesper Svensson. I think he could be a star. I'm not ready for that declaration yet, but I do think he could be an interesting pick here this week. Carl Phillips at 125-1. He is not going to get much love until he kind of shows with any kind of level of consistency that he can play the PGA Tour. He's got free range now, right? He's got a multiple-year exemption. He's in good shape to make the playoffs. However, he's got to follow that up to some degree, and that we don't have a body of evidence for him really before Puerto Rico on the PGA Tour makes it tough to put him much shorter than this. I don't think he's going to win this week, but he would be an interesting top 20 bet. I think he's got the game for it. Chan Kim was a guy everyone loved in the fall. Now he's 135-1 again. Going to stay away from that. We talked to Adam Schenck, actually, for our The Road to French Lick show that we do about the Corn Ferry Tour, which you can watch on Golf News Net TV as well as on our social channels, YouTube channel, etc. Talked to him, and he said very specifically, he feels close to a breakthrough. And he said his intention for the rest of this year is to win twice. You don't usually say that out loud unless you feel like you're getting to that point. So this may be an early tip-off on Adam Schenck. I'm just telling you what he said to me and what he said to Brendan Sweeney, who's my co-host for the show. Consider him. Just consider him, because these odds are probably going to get shorter. He feels like he's there. It's what he's saying is 1, 2, 3 swings per tournament are costing him. And if he mitigates those, turns those bogeys and doubles into pars and bogeys, that's enough. That something special could happen there. So I want to point him out because of that conversation. Joseph Bramlett has been playing very good golf. We'll talk about him a little bit more in our second episode because we have a short-term set of indicators that we look at, and we're going to include that in the show for the first time. I really like him based on those short-term indicators. Most of those come against weak competition, but those indicators are there, especially the ones that are kind of absolute without competition. Torbjörn Olsen, I like quite a bit, but I just don't see him picking it up this week. Danny Walker, what a hell of a story at the Players, man. 150-1 this week. I have no idea what he was last week. Probably 800-1. I have no idea what he came in at, being the last guy in the field when Jason Day WD'd and ticked everybody off who had any kind of DFS lineup with him in it. But he came off the Corn Ferry Tour 28th, and honestly, I didn't even think about him in that position at all because he was never in doubt on that Sunday at French Lick. But local guy, Florida guy, maybe he's got more experience here than we know. Not saying to go pick him for a win, but maybe a top 20 could be interesting. And then we'll get into our long shots. Sam Ryder, 150-1. Davis Riley, 165-1. Adam Svensson, 175-1. Brian Campbell, slowest ball speed on tour, but a winner this year, 175-1. Eric Cole, a little preview for our course fits. We'll talk about that in the second show, but he is a good course fit here. I do like him a little bit at 175-1. Nico Echeverria just flies up and down the odds board. It's so interesting. He's now on the backside of that. I'll stay away from it at 175-1. I do think Quade Cummins is kind of interesting, not to win, but for a top 20. And then Christopher Ventura, 251, mildly interesting. Aldrich Potgieter, mildly interesting at 200-1. I don't think you get a huge advantage by being a bomber here if you look at the history of this tournament. Got to be able to shape the ball a little bit. Got to be fairly accurate. If you look at the strokes gained breakdown of our course fit modeling of players who finished in the top 25, it skews more to putting than practically any other course on the PGA Tour. And then if you look at the honor roll of winners, you go, how is that even possible? Because you've got Sam Burns, who is solely dedicated to putting well on Bermuda surfaces. You've got Paul Casey, who did have a very good short game. Then you've got Taylor Moore and Peter Malnati. So maybe. However, if you look at those kind of course fits, you don't see a lot of benefit or as much benefit in being a big strokes gained guy off the tee. It's about 18% of that total makeup, and it's about 63% overall strokes gained tee to green. So if you put all that together, it really isn't that convincing that being a big hitter here is a big winner. You got to be a flusher. Most of it comes from being able to hit the ball well on the approach. So keep that in mind about this golf course, about the week ahead. It really is an interesting tournament. It's hard to kind of identify people you love because you look at the honor roll of champions and you go, okay, Sam Burns twice, but what else has he done outside of your couple wins but struggling this year? Obviously, the randoms in Taylor Moore and Peter Malnati. You go back farther than that, you get some random winners. as well, but you also get some greats, right? You get a Luke Donald who is at the peak of his powers, number one in the world in one here. But again, kind of in the main, you don't have to be – KJ Choi loves this place. You don't have to be a long hitter to succeed here. You have to be a good flusher, iron player, and you've got to get a lot of – just got to gain strokes. You've got to gain strokes putting. More significantly, because some of these putting surfaces are enormous, you have to not lose strokes putting. And that's another big part of the high percentage of strokes gained putting here. Because these surfaces are big, you can easily lose strokes by three putting. And a lot, you're going to see a fair amount of this week. There's going to be a lot of pitch on greens back to front that you really want to avoid being past the pin. You got to be pin high. Tiger Woods talked about that here when he played here and got close to winning. What was that, almost 7 or 8 years ago now? So you got to keep that in mind, that courses that may emphasize putting more than others, it can be just as much about not losing strokes as gaining strokes. So just keep that in mind as well. All right, that's going to do it for us on this show, this first of the week here on The Press. We'll have a second show. We're going to talk about a little bit more in depth about the kind of metrics I use for short game or short term indicators about players. We'll talk a little bit more about first round leader bets. We did have some interest about that. So we're going to talk about that on the show. And then we're going to just kind of get into some other kind of more in the weeds thinking about this tournament. And hopefully that'll be kind of a good way to have two shows each week about a PGA tournament and then throw in the stuff where we're talking about the Porsche Singapore Classic on the DP World Tour. Well, we don't really have much else to talk about, so we still get two quality shows out of it. And then in the weeks where we have kind of the full slate, get closer to four or five major tours in action, we'll dedicate a third show to those tournaments specifically, and we'll kind of keep this two-show model going with kind of a more general overview about the tournament, which is still pretty in-depth, I think, but then a second episode that really kind of gets into the weeds on some indicators that I like to use when making my bets. If you have any questions, get a hold of me on social media, at Ryan Ballingy. Shoot me an email, ryan@thegolfnewsnet.com. You can join Golf News Net for $40 for 1 year, $70 for 2 years, or $100 for 3 years. Over at thegolfnewsnet.com, get access to all of my picks, all of our tools, and all of the in-depth articles that we do every week, including that full access to the model that we do each and every week that's been so successful for basically 5 years now. And then we just opened back up our Discord server. Check it out. You can find the link on all of our articles at golfnewsnet.com. Watch this show on YouTube. Now we're streaming it live, at least one of the shows a week, on X and Facebook. You can also watch us on Golf News Net TV, which is available on Roku for the Golf News Net app, as well as on Zeem, Free Live Sports, and Freecast. I'm Ryan Ballingy. Thank you for watching, and we will talk to you in the next episode this week of The Press. Have a good day, everybody.